guys, gals, and non-binary pals, and welcome to the 5th Trooper Podcast. I'm Owen, and as always, I am with my co-pilot here, Isaac. Isaac, how's it going?
It is going. Glad to be here, as always.
And we've got a friend with us today. We've got the newest member of the 5th Trooper. We've got Rob Hobby. Rob,
hey,
welcome.
How you doing?
Rob is making some painting videos for us, and so we're going to be asking him a bunch of painting questions. So if you would like to have any of those tips covered and learn how to become a better painter yourself, keep it tuned right here. But first, and as always, we just want to say thank you to everybody over at Patreon for allowing us to do this and letting us be part of this. It makes our lives super easier, so hey, thanks. And if you'd like to support us, go over to patreon.com/thefifthtrooper. We appreciate you being there and helping us grow. You know, you helped Rob join us, and so now we get to have Rob in house and fun things to talk to him about. Anyway, so now to the actual interview with him. Rob, you are an absolutely excellent painter. We have seen your stuff for months now, and just out of curiosity, you know, how did you get to be so good at painting? Was it like a natural talent, or did you just hours of practice?
Well, thank you. I don't really like the word talent. I don't believe in it. I think everything can be improved with practice and hard work. And yeah, I guess I painted a few models when I was a kid, as a teenager, you know. And then about 10 years ago, I had some really difficult times in my personal life. Wound up living with my mum for 6 months and bought some Warhammer toys and paints and stuff. And sort of, I suppose where I was at the time mentally, got back into that like childhood state, right? And then in lockdown and COVID, I just went, right, I'm going to get really good at this. And I spent a minimum of 30 hours a week painting. It was a bit mental. I did that and I watched Star Trek, 727 hours of Star Trek. It's not very good.
Okay. I spent COVID playing World of Warcraft, so yeah, you know, I mean, this is way better.
I got into this hobby around COVID too. That's probably the first time I picked a paintbrush up. I got nowhere near as good as you did, but I did also start painting around then.
So that is how you got started, and we have a lot of people that are watching that are getting started themselves. They just picked up the starter kits.
Sure.
They are joining the hobby. What are some tips that you would give a brand new person into Star Wars Legion? How would you tell them to go about painting their minis and starting to paint?
I mean, I guess that's a huge question. On the channel, what I've been supposed focusing on is trying to push for higher quality models. I do think a lot of the time in Legion, like before I played Legion, I used to play a Warhammer game competitively, and the level of hobby is just, I would say, a little bit higher when you go to those Warhammer events. And I think sometimes in Legion we are guilty of just taking the easy route, and I'm not saying that's always unacceptable, right? It's absolutely the thing to do. If you just want your toys on the table and to push Luke Skywalker around, do that. I have the courtesy to paint it, because, you know, like, going to an event costs a lot of money, and when I go to an event, I want to be playing Star Wars, and I want to be Luke Skywalker or whatever it is. So just basically get some very simple paint on there. In terms of absolute beginners, you know, there's loads and loads of stuff out there on the internet of what to do, but buy some decent brushes, buy a couple of paints that you're going to want to use that are appropriate to your army. There's loads of Citadel Contrast, Army Painter Speed Paints. There's loads of these sort of shortcut paints that we can use just to get paint on models, if that's all you're concerned about. So, you know, be doing that and, you know, find the right advice. You can always hit me up on the Discord or on Instagram if you're looking for advice on that stuff. But one thing I think I try and do, or tried to do, I probably do a bit less now, and that's not a good thing, is whenever I'm painting a new unit, I'll go, right, I want to practice this technique for the next. So, you know, for this model, I'm definitely going to practice my wet blending, or I'm going to practice my dry brushing, or whatever it is. But I suppose I'm waffling all over the place, aren't I? What am I trying to say? I think it depends on what your goal is. So maybe the first step is just identifying your goal. Do you just want toy soldiers that have some paint on? Or do you want to be going, I want my army to look really beautiful? And I think
that's, you know, brilliant, and I loved your thing about how every time that you paint a model, you like pick something that you're trying to improve on. Like I don't do quite that. I normally have like a new style that I try, but every time like I have a new unit that I'm painting, I'm just like, okay, for this unit, I'm going to try to make all of the bases look marble, or like, okay, this time I'm going to try to make them all red, you know, like something of that nature to kind of, it's like that, but just not as detailed, because I'm not thinking about the tech spec, you know, like the technical like techniques of it.
I think in doing that, you're probably going to start doing those techniques and things anyway. Like, I can think of two or three ways to do marble. And if you're trying to do marble, then you're going to experiment and see what's the best thing for you. Marble bases would be cool, actually, wouldn't it? For some, like, Naboo stuff.
That's like that idea. That was roughly my thought process. Yeah. I had some rebels that were that were from Gorman. They're the Gorman front, and so I painted them in the same colors as they had from the show, and I was like, well, it's kind of like that plaza, they're kind of like on a marbly floor, so I tried to find some tips and things online to like make it look marbly, and I think I did not a bad job. but it is, you know, I know that Isaac has said this several times, that painting is scary. As a brand new person, when you don't know what you're doing, painting is scary.
Correct. Yeah, it's probably the number one pushback I get when I go, like, a TCG player comes by, and they see, like, oh, wow, this looks awesome. Like, yeah, you should come out and play, man. And they're like, I can never paint. Like, I can never touch a paintbrush. And I'm like, so there is a way to get into it. Like, it's not as scary as it has to be. And that's why, so we're glad to have people like you on the cast talking about it and doing painting videos, you know? Show us the way.
I suppose I get it. It can be scary. It can be daunting. But again, it's what's your goal? If you're just trying to win games and stuff, then I'm just going to slap a couple of colours on this and it'll be fine. But for me, it's the thing I really, you know, like, I like thinking about my lists and trying to build my list and wonder how I'm going to lose next. And I won a game last night. It's the first game I've won in weeks. I'm on a very long losing streak recently. But equally, I find the hobby aspect of it is just as enjoyable, whether that's painting or working out how to base my miniatures or making some scenery or whatever it is. That, like, there's so many like facets to this hobby, and you can get as involved in as many or as few as you like. Like, some people just want that really competitive thing, and I'm going to try and min-max my list the best. And other people, there's a store down in the UK in Portsmouth, and Seb, the guy who runs it, I've only met him once or twice, but he said the reason he got into Legion was because he wanted to build terrain and tables. And when you go and play a tournament there, it's like a treat to play on some of these tables. Some of them, there's one, a Camino table, and I've never managed to play on it. And I'm quite glad, because I'm not sure. I think it catches everyone out because most of it is ocean. But they look incredible, you know. So there's so many facets. And if it is just getting paint on a model, just get paint on a model. But, you know, we want to aspire to be a bit better than that, don't we? And, like, make things look great.
For sure. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the that mentality of just going that extra little bit of step, like that extra little mile, I think is exactly the thing that makes painting less daunting, is because you're right, you know, like it is a thing where, what are you trying to do? But once you've primed it, you're like, okay, well, I've primed it. I might as well put a base coat on. And then once you put the base coat on, you're like, well, I can do a little, you know, glaze or something. And then it's like, okay, well, now I can do like the highlights and do a dry brush. And then by the time that you're actually done that model, you know, you've done like 10 different techniques. And it's like, oh, well, you know, you started just with the daunting task of just like, all right, I guess I'll just do the base coat and get everything on there. But then like those little extra bits are the things that like take it from, you know, down here to up here. I think that's the thing that I love so much about watching your painting videos, is that you can see those things that you know, you're doing those same things of just like, all right, you've done a base coat that's, you know, orange on the crab droid, but then you add that little extra highlight, you add that extra little shadow, and that's the little extra thing that makes it go from just a crab droid on the table to what is essentially a piece of artwork.
It gives a lot of life to it.
I think... I don't know. I guess those things are fun for me. I want to be doing them. I want to be pushing myself. Still with sort of thinking about beginners, I remember going to my first Warhammer tournament, and I was playing Underworlds, so a Warband's like 3 to 7 models, whatever it is. And I had my few guys painted up, and I went to a tournament like, this is going to be awesome. And I was a bit befuddled, like, oh, I can't believe I didn't win Best Painted. So I'm like, of course I didn't. There's some of the people there were absolutely mind-blowingly good. But you start going and you go, oh, they've tried that. And then you'll talk to them, and, oh, that's how you did that. And then you start So the next thing I paint, oh, I'll try a couple of those things. And then the next thing I paint, those things are now the norm. And each time you do it, you're sort of progressing through. And I think, like in that crab droid video, I was quite conscious. I didn't want to be really, you know, you can spend hours and hours and hours doing those blends. And I did them quite rough and quite quick, and then just put a bunch of battle damage over it, which instantly hides the the blends. And someone said to me, oh, it's amazing, I've never thought of that. And I was like, oh, that's just a sort of standard part of my practice now. I think it was some Spanish painter I was watching on YouTube I saw doing that. You know, and it is, you know, like those little things become the norm the more you do them, I think.
For sure. Yeah, it's very, like, I came into the hobby very, like, scared of painting.
Right.
For sure. It was like, I knew I wanted to play the game, and it's like, okay, how do I figure this out? And, like, you watch the YouTube videos, you watch tutorials, and it starts becoming, like, it went from something that I dreaded, and I was like, okay, I have to do this to play the game, to, like, something that's I quite enjoy a lot now. And it's cool, like, it's funny how your mindset towards painting will evolve over time, too. So even if you're somebody that's like, oh, wow, this is going to be a lot, you'd be really surprised how much you actually start to enjoy it as you do it. It becomes a equally, if not more, fun part of the hobby. Versus, like, playing the game, like you said, it's a very diverse hobby, and it's part of what makes it so great. Like, you're meeting people, you're playing games, but also, like, it's nice to do something with your hands and be able to hold a mini up and be like, I did that.
Yeah.
And it's a good feeling.
Do you guys have... Like a task or an album that you kind of have going on in the background while you paint? I always find myself that I'll be sitting there and like I love watching through all of those like breakdown videos of comic book movies on YouTube, and so I'll just have like a playlist of like 10 of those, and then be like, all right, next hour I'm painting, and I just sit down and I watch all those while sitting there painting my little guys. Like, do you do something similar to that, or?
This is bad. I'll tell you what I had on in the background when I started painting. Italian 1 and 2. I was in college still, attending Soon University. So many classes were in the background of mine. But what about you, Brad? What do you have in the background?
Well, obviously, I'm normally listening to my favorite Legion podcast. But,
the Notorious Scoundrel, right?
Notorious Scoundrel, that's right. That's why you're losing so much. You're listening to us.
But I've fallen into a really bad habit of listening. Well, I don't know if it's a bad habit of listening to Jack Reacher audiobooks. And I'm not even sure they're good. A friend of my mum's a couple of years ago went, oh, you've got a Jack Reacher book. I really like those. And two or three days later, one arrived in the post. And since then, once a month, a Jack Reacher book arrives in the post. I don't particularly like them. Like, they're fine. They're a good read on the beach when you're not really paying much attention to the world, aren't they? But in order to sort of be polite and keep up with the conversation with her, I have to keep up on the books. So I'm sort of dual tasking. They're all the same. And some of them she sent me three or four times at this point. I have shelves of them in next door.
Oh, man. Like the same Jack Reacher book? Thing.
Yeah. Oh. I think it's a nice thing. And I was like, you realize you've sent me that one before? And she's like, ah, they're all the same. And she reads them and then sends them to me. So obviously she's then reading it again and sending it to me again. So, yeah, sure. A lot of Jack Reacher at the moment. And I wouldn't bother.
Audiobooks is a good idea, too.
It is a thing that I constantly tell some people, because I know, like, they have that kind of, like, I have to be doing something while painting, because they can't just sit there and paint, and it's like, great, you don't have to just sit there and paint. Like, put on your TV show. Like, I've watched through, like, rewatched through all of the Star Wars movies while painting through various models and things like that. Like, it's great to have that on in the background and just be like, oh, yeah, that's the guy I'm painting.
Yeah, you can do the thing of going full immersion, can't you? And going, right, today I'm painting Darth Vader, so I'm going to watch the original trilogy whilst I'm doing it.
I think it works quite well.
I say watch. I'm probably not watching them. I'm more listening.
Yeah, it is
more listening.
But I think it's great mindfulness. Like when you're there and you're spending that time with the model, I think it's probably quite healthy for our minds, you know, to be doing that.
I'm sure there's a study that would prove that.
100%. Yeah. My therapist recommended that I paint more.
Yeah,
because he's like, hey, painting is a great way of like doing a meditation, basically. Like it's a form of meditation, and so if you are also like me and just screaming at the world, paint some minis. It's a great, it's a very relaxing thing to do, of just like sitting there and brushing through, and you know, making some artwork. And then by the end of it, you have some cool painted minis. You're like, look at the thing that I did.
I once went to a lecture on happiness, and it was about happiness and creativity. And they were saying, you aren't actually happy when you're out drinking or dancing or whatever it is. You're truly happy when you exist in the moment for the thing you're doing. And he said that could be washing the dishes, it could be painting a picture, it could be writing a song. And in that moment when you're doing it, you know, like, I'm never sure if I've spent 25 minutes painting a model or 5 hours and it will suddenly be the middle of the night. And my whole reason in that moment is spent there doing that. And, oh, I'll just push that and I should stop now, but I'll just push here and I'll just do that. And that time just disappears. And like, I like that feeling. You know, I like being sort of at one and finding it peaceful.
It's essentially hitting a flow state, right? Of like, you're in that zone, and then like by the time that you're done painting and you snap out of it, you're just like, oh, that was 6 hours. Okay.
Well, so much of our lives are like so fast often, and it's nice to have something that slows down. You can focus on one thing for a little bit, take a little bit of a break, recharge. It's a good thing. I definitely believe there are therapeutic and good things about just stopping, being in the moment, and painting. I'm sure there's a study somewhere that would prove that.
If not, maybe we'll do one. We'll get some sort of international funding to do it, right?
That's right. It's going to go from a contract.
Because we're talking about, you know, the intrinsic value of painting all of these things and the soul, you know, eyes are the windows to the soul, and I am terrible at painting eyes. So how do you paint eyes that it doesn't look like I've somehow have them like cross-eyed and bug-eyed? You know, I always just end up having like two large white dots somewhere on their forehead.
Yeah,
and it's
try.
Like, it's just, it's awful. So how do you paint eyes good?
Well, it's good that you're making the effort to do it. The old Legion models where there's just sort of weird black holes into their soul where the eyes should be. Terrifying. Oddly, and we haven't prepped this, but I imagine anyone listening will think we have, in the next video I do sort of talk a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit about painting the eyes.
It's good to watch.
What hints would I give and tips? Don't use white. I think if you use white, it draws your eye to it. Because it's quite unnatural. Well, look at, like, how many parts of your body are true white? Like, none of them?
Yeah.
So
yeah, okay.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Use an off-white or like a pale skin tone or a very light grey or something like that. I'll dot the eyes in like that. Then go for, is it the pupil or the iris? I don't know. I'm not trying to paint both. Like, you know. And then usually what I'll do is I'll take some like a flesh shade wash. I really like that Citadel Reikland flesh shade, and I tend not to use washes in my painting very much, but you can just sort of touch the brush there and it'll flow around the inside of the eye and it'll make it look a little bit bloodshot, and it'll create immediate contrast between the eye and the skin around it. And it is, you know, it still needs practice, and it's a fine motor skill. So they're sort of hints with product and stuff. The other thing is the brush you're using. And I think, and I see this all the time with mini painters, and this is just my opinion. My friend Stu thinks the exact opposite thing and is every bit the painter I am, so he would give you different advice. But I think you should be using the biggest brush you can, but with the finest point. And, you know, when I first started painting, I'd buy these tiny, tiny little brushes. And by the time you get your paint on the model and you get your model and you're all set and you've braced yourself and taken a breath and the paint's dried on the bristles. So you then go through that thing about 25 times, by which point there's just lumps of pigment sort of floating around and it'll look messy. So I use like a size 3 brush, which is, in the miniature painting world, I suppose, quite large. But what I'm able to do is the belly of the brush will hold more paint, and therefore it'll flow off more easily. So when I'm ready to, you know, do that final stroke, it'll come off, and I'll sort of be hovering and imagining that I'm about to do it until I've actually done it. Whereas if you're doing that and you're using one of those tiny brushes that are like two hairs, and you do that and then you do it and just nothing happens, you're like, oh. You know, so it feels really counterintuitive. But my opinion is big brush, fine tip, you know.
I've heard that before too.
Yeah.
I started with like these really microscopic brushes and found the same frustration.
And it takes forever to do anything, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
What are your because obviously you need to have a very fine tip then, and my brushes don't have any fine tips anymore because I guess I paint wrong. So my question would be to, you know, for someone like me, it's like, how do you maintain that tip? How do you maintain that sharpness on them so you're not buying a new brush every 6 months?
Well, I don't think there's any painting wrong, right? Any painting is good painting. I'm gonna pick you up on that. But what do I do? Normally after a long painting session, I'll clean the brush. You can buy all sorts of fancy brush soaps and things like that, and I've bought all those products. But the thing I find the best, and it's weird that it's in my house, is just normal hair shampoo. I don't have much use for it outside of cleaning my brushes. So like a little dot of that, and I just clean it in the palm of my hand and make sure I reshape the brush afterwards. You'll be astonished that even if you've been cleaning it throughout your painting session, how much paint comes off. And, you know, I'm only like licking it just to get it back into shape or whatever. So I think trying to do that, and I should do it every painting session. I probably do it every other one. But when you're spending, you know, the brushes I use are like 25, 30 quid. So I don't know what that is in dollars, $40 or $50, I guess, a time.
I mean, that's far more expensive than the $5 like army painter ones that I'm buying and using.
I find the price of them goes up and down. I don't know why. So, some sort of supply and demand, I guess. But, you know, you don't want to be replacing that all the time. Also, you kind of get used to painting with one. So that's like care outside of it. You can get other products that are meant to like melt any little bits of pigment and things like that you've got. I'm never sure how well those things work, and because I think they damage the brush as much as they clean it. Other things is like when you're actually painting and getting paint onto your brush, like never, do you know what the ferrule of the brush is?
For those at home, because I do know this.
Absolutely know what that is.
Yeah,
but
so just quick. So we got quick lesson for those at home.
Brush here, obviously, our tip's our tip. The belly's the fat bit where all the paint will stay in. And then the ferrule is the bit where the bristles attach on this metal part. I don't know if the ferrule's the actual metal part or where it attaches. But if pigment ever gets in there, when it dries, your brush goes like that. Mm-hmm. So you have to be,
and that's what all of my brushes look like. They're all frayed.
So it's probably like when you're, are you using Citadel paints by any chance?
No, I use army paint.
Okay, a lot of people who use the Citadel ones, because they'll take it out the pot with the brush, and at that point you have to clean it immediately, or all that pigment's drying in there. But it's making sure that the paint never gets to that point, and if it does, you want to clean it straight away. You'll find if you use a lot of washes or a lot of contrast paints or speed paints or any of those sort of products that are designed to flow more. Oh, this is so nerdy. Are people actually interested in this? No one cares about this.
This is fascinating.
But there's flow agents in there designed to make the paint flow more. So that will seep up into the ferrule of your brush and again make the bristles go out like that. So whenever you're using those paints, try and never let it like beyond the halfway point of your brush, and always clean it as kind of quickly as you can. Metallic paints can have a similar thing. I think it's to do with the size of the pigments in order to give it the metallic quality. I'm really not sure about why they do it.
I do use some metallic paints, so that might be my culprit there.
That makes sense. I just start using speed paints a lot, and my brush is starting to lose the tip. So it's okay, very cool.
So less in the belly and clean it more often and more frequently. Well, okay, we got it.
Bigger belly, but so brush like that. Oh, hang on, I've got a whole mank. Have we all got this on our painting desks? Right, loads of brushes that you will never ever use again, but you can't bring yourself to throw away. So I've probably got a GW one in here somewhere. I don't know, is that a GW one? Sorry, it's not. But that's like a size zero brush, and like you can see it's just instantly knackered. But that brush there, I mean, this one is a size 3. I've probably been painting with it for over a year now, and they're the same brand, but because I'm able to get more paint to store in there, it's less likely to fray and go manky and stuff like that. At least that's my opinion on it. Like I say, other people will disagree with me, and that's fine. They can be wrong if they want to.
You know?
you're allowed to.
I'm saying that for Stu. Yeah. Make sure you know that.
I think those are very solid tips for people that are, you know, either me, you know, like that have been painting for a couple of years now, or brand new. Like that's a good things to keep in mind, so that way you don't constantly have to keep going back and
that's super helpful.
Yeah,
I think there's also a thing like it's not worth spending that much money on a brush when you're just starting out. You know, like try a bunch, get used to it. I would say that any sort of natural brush, I think it's Sable they use, feels nicer. The paint will flow more nicely and typically lasts longer than the artificial or the synthetic brushes. Although I actually really like those for like wet blending and certain techniques.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That is a great point that it should be highlighted to people more often, is that you don't have to buy like the $100 horsehair, like super nice made in Japan brush. Like, don't start there. You will ruin it. It's way better to like start with the $5 one, get time underneath of your belt, and then upgrade from there. I think that's a huge thing. That's also part of my philosophy of like tools in general. I am a recent new homeowner in the past few years here, and so like I've had to buy tools to do stuff, and I've bought the bare minimum of so many of them solely because of the fact that I was like, well, if I mess it up, I'm not going to feel bad that I messed up a saw that cost me $10 versus buying like one of the best saws that you could ever buy and then being like, oh no, I've ruined it and because I, you know, put too big a piece of wood into it or something, you know, like, and so now it's like, hey, who cares?
I think you also get to find out what you like, don't you? You know, like I'm sure it's true of brushes as tools, as different brands of paint, all those things. Like the more of them you try, the more you go, well, actually that suits me a little bit better than this one does.
What are the brands that you gravitate towards?
Oh God, I'm a bit all over the place. At the moment I'm having a real, I'm really in love with the AK paints. I think they're really, really nice.
Okay.
They're not hugely dissimilar to the Vallejo ones, but I feel like they're sort of Vallejo plus. They're just a little bit nicer. I went through a real love affair of the Scale 75 stuff, but I like it for glazing and sort of those techniques. If you're just trying to do a base coat with them, it takes 4 or 5 coats because they've got sort of a transparency to them. And actually, in some ways, that transparency is really useful. So, yeah, I'm all over the AK stuff at the moment. But I'll get bored of that when something else comes out. And I love P3 Privateer. Well, it was Privateer Press. Who are they owned by now? Steamforge Games own P3 paints, if you can get them. They're as rare as hen's teeth, and they are beautiful. I've always loved those paints. I think they've just been relaunched, but I don't know when they're coming out.
Are you, do you use solely brush, or are you also airbrushing?
I love using the airbrush. I love it. It's, sorry, I'm looking at it, it's over there. It's a bit broken at the moment because I put some old varnish through it. Airbrushing's fun. Like, people hate on it, but it is quicker, and you can, I was going to say cheat, but I don't know if it's cheating. It's just using a different tool for the job. But airbrushing's fun. I can do things with it I probably wouldn't do with a brush. So sometimes, do you know a Zenithal highlighters? So, you know, like we often, I encourage people.
For new people, Zenithal highlighting is when you, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but Zenithal highlighting is when you prime it in a lighter color from a specific angle, because that is basically where the light is hitting the model. And so, like, you would do something like you prime it all black, but then you have, like, a gray or a white that you go in at a specific angle and you spray from there, right?
Exactly.
There you go, new players, there you go.
And that's a really good technique if you are using speed paints, because then you whack an even layer of speed paint over, and the sort of highlighting is already done for you. I like it. It helps me see the shape of the miniature a little bit. My eyesight's going, so, you know, like that painting sometimes, and it helps you see the shape of the miniature. Also sort of starts to dictate the highlight pattern for you. I don't think I'd bother doing that with a rattle can, like going outside, painting that, waiting for that to dry, and the smell of it. And it, rattle cans are expensive. With an airbrush, it adds a minute or two onto my painting time. But I'll also do things. So after I've sort of almost finished painting, I might do like a, I don't know, there's probably a word for it, but like an anti-Zenithal. So all my rebels are based to look like they're on a spaceship, and the base is all sort of blues and greys. So I'll often spray them a transparent blue from underneath just to make it look like the light's sort of reflecting around them a little bit. And to do that by brush is doable. You're talking an hour per model to do that, to get it nice.
Oh, yeah.
To blast it with an airbrush, 30 seconds. Like, obviously I'm going to... And it's really fun. Like, obviously I'm going to do that, you know.
No, I think that's a great technique and also a good point for people coming into it of just like, there is airbrushing, A, you know, not just regular brushes, and B, that some techniques are easier or harder depending on if you're using an airbrush or a regular brush. And so that is a good thing to kind of just note and have in the back of their minds while they're starting.
Yeah, I do think if you're serious about army painting and you're like really involved in the hobby, like I got my first airbrush set up for, I think it was £109 off of Amazon. And, you know, I broke the airbrush within 3 months. But by that point, I'm like, yeah, this is really fun. I don't mind buying an expensive one. But I've still got the same compressor and the same little part and all the stuff that came with it. 100 quids. I'm all right with that, you know.
Yeah.
Do you have advice on, like, how to get a setup for it? Because I have never gotten an airbrush. I've always wanted one. But, like, I've always had, like, apartments and stuff. I never had an outdoor, like, ventilated space to use it. Do you have any tips for just getting the setup going?
I'm terrible for that. Unless I'm having a really long session, I don't even put a dust mask on or anything. I do have my painting set up next to a window, and sometimes I open it.
I'm usually immune to a lot of fumes, and so maybe I can get by.
Well,
we'll see.
You know, my airbrushing booth is whatever cardboard box the models came in normally, just to stop again on my desk. Although this wall gets repainted once every 6 months, just from sort of overspray and stuff like that. But basically all hobby paints for miniatures aren't toxic. You're not using any sort of chemical thinners or anything like that. Probably best practice to wear some sort of dust mask because there are particles of plastic floating around in the air. But, you know, we've all got plastic in us all the time anyway. Some of the scale model stuff, so if people have done historical modeling or stuff like that, those might have chemical thinners, and at that point you need to invest in a respirator and things like that. But otherwise, you know, have a fan going and have the window open, you're going to be fine, in my opinion, as an unqualified professional.
Well, that's like good to hear though, because it's one of those things that's been daunting to me, because I'm like, oh well, I have to have like this entire crazy ventilation set up to even use the basic paints. But I didn't even think about checking to see like what paints are like necessarily toxic or have like those chemical thinners you're talking about. Like I can read the ingredients and see like what is semi-safe and don't be stupid with it.
I mean, all the your major miniature brands, Citadel, Vallejo, AK, whatever, they're all water-based, so you're thinning them with water. And then I think airbrush thinner's got a bit of isopropyl alcohol, is that
isopropyl?
Isopropyl alcohol, I think that's the ingredient that sort of helps thin it a bit. But other than that,
yeah, as someone who was outside and I'd had a rattle can of primer and I primed all two starter sets at the same time, I'd also suggest taking a break, because I was outside. Yeah. Even with that, like, I had to stop, because when you're on like your 50th model that you're spray painting, you're like, I have a respirator, I am outside, like it still isn't helping.
Stinks as like, well, that stuff, doesn't it?
It's a lot.
I think,
yeah, I was like, I need to go inside and just like chill for a couple minutes so I can see straight again.
You would say the air, that like the air spray breathing is a lot easier versus rattle can paint, of course. It's a lot as far as like odors are concerned.
When you've primed something with a rattle can, you don't want to bring it inside immediately because it stinks.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to sort of degas. I assume that's whatever chemical propellant they're putting in there is. But with an airbrush, it's air. The propellant is air. It's just, right. You know, if I am priming two starter sets, I'd never do that. That seems like too much hard work. Do like two or three at a time. I'd have the windows open and I'd be conscious, like, this is a big long session, I'm going to wear my respirator. But when I'm just like blasting a model from underneath for 30 seconds, I hope my mum
doesn't. It doesn't seem nearly as bad. Rob, you can tell me how I'm wrong here, because I know that I am. Is that when I go to build and paint, I take the plastic sheets out of the box and I will prime them still on their sprues and everything. I'll just prime everything on their sprues. Then I will cut them off of the sprues and I will paint them before I glue them together, because that way when you have like the model that has like the hand the close to the chest, like, and gun, right, or whatever, you can actually like paint the chest, sure, before putting the gun on top of it, so that way you can actually see there. That kind of a thing, or you know, like you can get underneath of the coat jacket before you put the legs in, and so then I'll paint that. And now when I when I glue those together, I do know that the glue will strip some of the paint, so I have to go back and do a little touch up of the joints. And then from there, I will do my glazes and my highlights and all of those, you know, washes and that kind of stuff. What is the correct way you're supposed to do that? Because I know that I'm wrong.
Part of me feels like that's absolute madness, but.
We should clip the reaction. Like,
yeah, your face was just like, no.
I guess as you were talking, I'm like, there have been competition pieces I've painted in sub-assemblies, but I'll often... What's the purpose you're painting? You know, if I'm painting something for a painting competition, every single bit of it has to be as close to perfect as I can get it. If a trooper's holding a gun like that and he's a rebel trooper and you're looking at him from 3 foot away whilst you chuck dice at him, probably doesn't matter if that's not perfectly highlighted. would be where I'd say. So I I've got to say the new AMG sculpts, like the ones I've painted, have been honestly such good quality. On that crab droid, I barely had a mold line to clean off. Like, it just glued together and it was done in no time. But often if you have got a bit of mold line to clean up or a gap to fill or something like that, then that's another reason I'd want it to be assembled first. But, you know, like I've got a piece sitting behind me here that is in a sub-assembly and at some point needs to be glued together. And the main reason it hasn't is I can't work out how to base it at the moment. So it's not something I do for rank and file, but for a competition piece or for maybe the leader of your army where you really wanted to push yourself and put in that little bit more extra effort, sure. But I would definitely have it off the sprue, because otherwise, you know, wherever you... I don't know why I'm pointing here. I'm assuming that where you've clipped it off the sprue is on its shoulder, and I don't know why.
I did understand what you were talking about by pointing at your shoulder. I was like, yeah, that's where the sprue is. Sprue connects, obviously.
But I wonder, you know, like, you're creating work for yourself there, so probably I'd clip it all off the sprue and at very least have it blue tacked to like a lollipop stick or something like that to prime it with. And I would have done the, you know, any mold lines and stuff like that prior if I was painting in sub-assembly. But generally, I will avoid doing that if I can.
So that's how you correctly do it, is you put it together first, then prime.
I think so.
The process is more enjoyable when it's put together. I tried both, and when I was painting them like on the sprue, I don't know, man, I just don't have the vision to like see where it's going. Like, I have to have it and see the progress, or else I feel like I've done nothing. Like, as a painting, I don't know. That's just like my own brain, though.
No, I think that I'm exactly the same. I think also you've got, if you are, you know, the way I like to highlight is to imagine the light is coming from an angle, and it's normally just on top or slightly to the right. So that's where the brightest points of the model should be. But if it's all in sub-assemblies, you know, my brain's not good enough to figure that stuff out. But if it's in front of me, I'm going, yeah.
Yeah. No, that 100% makes sense. And that's why I don't try to do my highlights and things until it is assembled. Yeah. Because you're right. Like, I can't figure that out. I also highly suggest that people don't paint it on the sprue, because I did that once and then I realized I didn't need everything that I painted. Because I was like, oh, choose this. Yeah, it's like, oh, choose the type of leg you want to give them or whatever. And I was like, oh no, I've just like painted way too many things than what I actually needed to use to assemble the one figure.
Some of those old sprues had a lot of extra bits too, so I hope you didn't waste too much time.
Yeah, I am actually honestly quite shocked, because I'm sitting right now painting the Wookiees. And the fact that the Wookiees have so many extra, they're just like, choose what kind of head, choose the arms. And I was like, there's so many options. And so like, I'm sitting there and I feel so bad, because like, I've painted my Wookiees, like I have them assembled and everything, but I look at the sprues and I have all of these sprues that are like half a Wookiee of like, there's heads and arms and weapons I haven't used, and I'm just like, what am I gonna do with all of this, because I don't have any bodies to put them on. I just have all this extra, you know, appendages.
Start sculpting.
You must have the prettiest looking bits box, at least, you know. Not I can just pop that on there, already done.
It's already painted. Cut it out real quick.
Have you tried doing it the other way?
When I first started, I tried to cut them all out, assemble it, and then prime it from there.
Yeah.
And I think it was a problem, at least from the And this is why I kind of like, as you mentioned, like subassembly it, I think works probably best, is because when I did prime it, it had that same problem of like, there was a coat or an armor or something that mm-hmm. it was like covering up part of their body. And so when I sprayed it with the primer, it left the outline because I didn't like turn the thing upside down and get to the other angle. And so then it just was like, oh, well, I didn't actually fully prime it. I've left part of it unprimed. And so I realized, I was like, okay, I can either prime it on the sprues and I can just do one pass on one side, flip it one pass on that side, and then everything, I've got both ends, or I'm going to have to assemble it and then like figure out what the angle is to like spray from the other end. I think if I wasn't using a spray can, that it would be less of a problem, and I would 100% build this in a different way.
It is easier when you're just sitting at your desk listening to Jack Reacher and go, oh, I'll just do this.
Exactly.
If the primer can't see it, then I can't see it. That's my rule.
I mean, it's a fair point.
I end up just, I always feel bad when I'm painting and there's like the one, I hate those crevices, like, because I'll see those and I know about them, right? It's like, oh no, my sleeper cell has died, and I'll pick it up, and then like I just like catch a glimpse like underneath the trench coat, and then I'm like,
that's why he died.
Yeah.
He knew that he was hiding there, and so he failed his save protest.
My speeder truck is painted on the inside, even though the lid's glued on it. Like, I couldn't, like, and I'm like, oh, I hate that I'm going to do this. And I just bust through it. But it still spent like 2 hours going, I'm just going to do this and glue the lid on. The lid, the roof.
Your A5 bus is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in Star Wars Legion. You. And every time I've seen a shot of it, I'm just like, I hate the A5 bus because I think it looks awful.
Oh, it's
but
terrible.
I would play it if it looked the way that you have yours styled, because yours is so pretty. And I was like, all right, I'll do it.
I think I was in my like local gaming group. I've got the same opinion as you, and I know some people love it. And was the inspiration just a brick? Like, it's just a brick you put on the table. And
yeah,
it's just Star Wars.
Some mobile game. Like it's like barely in canon. Like, I think it was like on a mobile app or something that they ripped it off of.
It was part of a mobile game, which was the first time it was visualized, the first time it's talked about was actually inside of the Star Wars Saga role-playing game.
Okay.
Because I had to look this up because I had such a disdain for that.
It's like, why is the Winnebago in the game now?
Yeah, I was like, I had such a hatred for it. I had to figure out where it came from so I could like just never consume that part of Star Wars media. And I was like, okay, well... I did, so I was like, all right.
I
actually loved that the Saga role-playing game, so I was like, okay.
I was determined to make mine look more dynamic. It's called a speeder truck, but it's just sort of a brick that moves. So I spent ages doing that, and the whole idea was I was going to use it to move Ahsoka around the board, and I painted it with all Ahsoka's markings and all this sort of thing, and then I can't do that now. So that's annoying. But I've also put it in such a way on the base that it's more or less unusable in game because it is permanently hitting every bit of terrain and things like that, and it's an awkward piece to move around the board at the best of times.
Sorry to cut you off there, I was just thinking that like because you do have it like it's tilted on the side and it really brings in some dynamics to that. When you look at other Star Wars Legion models, are there like regular troopers and things like that that you think of like that similar way, that it's just like, man, if you just have a little bit of green stuff and put them sideways, they look so much cooler.
Maybe not so much for the sort of, you know, your, I was going to say rank and file, your core units and stuff, but you know, if you're taking a party bus, it's it should be a centerpiece of your army, you know. There's something that there's not much of in Legion, isn't it? Is kit bashing. Like, I've seen as the new starter sets and the new sculpts and stuff are coming out, we are getting head swap options and things like that. So we're seeing a little bit more of it. I've done a Deidre inspired piece for the next painting video, which I think is coming out in the next week. And I decided to give her the stun baton, but I'd been looking loads at this painter called El Minis. Oh, I can't pronounce his name. El Miniaturista.
El
Miniaturista.
Oh, yeah.
And he does loads of stuff with like lighting effects for Warhammer 40K. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to do that. So make it look like her stun baton's a bit broken and just try and... Because otherwise the lead of your army's just sort of standing there with a stick. and I want it to be a bit more. And it is a thing, you know, if you play 40k, your heroic piece is going to be on a huge great big base with 100 dead bodies under it, or however they've chosen to sculpt it. And Luke Skywalker's just a dude on the same size base wearing a black tracksuit. And I want to see more of that in Legion, and more people sort of embracing, like, how can I push this? How can I make it my own? And I do think all the new sculpts and the new models lend themselves to that much nicer than those really soft plastic ones.
I would wholeheartedly agree. I think also, and you can talk a little bit about this because you know, I think how you base your minis and what you do with them on those bases can really set apart, and very easily set apart, you know, like something that's just kind of okay to something absolutely fantastic. When I first got into the hobby, I was dabbling and I was trying to understand, like, what are things that I could do. And so one of the things that I remember I bought first, I think I had like two or three games underneath my belt at the time, so it was like very early on, but I ended up buying the tiniest micro LED I could find that attached to a little battery. And so then I glued the wiring on my FD cannon, because I started with the Echo Base box. And so I glued it right to the tip, and I spun the wires back, and I put some snow basing on top, and I built a little kind of shed out of popsicle sticks that held the battery. And so then cool. Put a bunch of snow on top of it, so that way I could just, like, it just looks like a snow mound when on the base, but then I can just, like, pop it open and swap the battery if I need to. And then I have, like, a little button that's at one of the guy's feet. I can just press the little button, and then just, like, I have a little light that turns on, so it looks like it's actively firing.
I love that.
That is so cool.
It was way too much effort for the effect that it gave me, but I felt so proud of it. I was like, this is the coolest thing.
Are you permanently
used a lot?
Sorry. Are you permanently?
I would highly recommend that other people don't do that. Like, it was way too much effort.
I think everyone should do that. I think you should do it for all the guns in your army.
That would be extreme. So impressive. Little LEDs on every single stormtrooper.
I've seen a guy who
does. The problem becomes you have to, like, hide the battery in the bases of everybody then, and you'd have to have, like, larger bases than are your standard ones to hide, like, a little button battery in there.
It's just going to give them presence on the board. They're going to be bigger than the other boys.
They're taller.
They eat their Wheaties.
What is something that either lazy players, new players, what are things that we could do to make our bases better? Like, what's something that you would just be like, hey,
low-hanging fruit,
know, instead of just, like, because obviously, like, when I first started, again, I was starting with Echo Base snow, so I just painted all my bases white. Yeah. That was it. And then I was like, oh, this doesn't look good. So I'm just, you know, I've evolved. I now do various different things. There are rocks with my snow now and various things. But what would you recommend for someone who's, like, just starting out, of just like, hey, just do this one little extra thing and it'll give it a little bit more?
I think you did exactly the right thing. You picked a theme. I'm doing Echo Base. It's going to be snow. And sure, you can get better than just painting it white, but at least your army will have looked cohesive and had a theme to it, things like that. And, you know, my Rebels, I made the decision I wanted them based on this sort of space station thing, but didn't want to buy the premium bases. So I freehand every one, and I hate them. I quite regularly just snap a mini off a base so I can glue a new unit on it, because I can't be bothered to do any more. but I think choosing that theme and then leaning into it, a lot of people just, they'll buy some texture paint, they'll whack it on, and then they'll have one tuft. Have you noticed how all models have one tuft on their base? And I've walked before, and I'm not always on just one tuft of perfect grass that's exactly the same as the tuft of grass my friend is standing next to. So, you know, maybe put two on, or cut one in half, or, you know, start experimenting. If you're going for a natural look, it needs to look natural. So put a tuft and a twig on, or, you know, and start just like just pushing a little bit more. I don't think that stuff's difficult to do. I can also understand that some people will do it from, you know, this unit of clones have the green tufts, that unit have the yellow tufts, whatever it is. So I can understand their gaming pieces. So again, I suppose it depends on purpose. But I think thinking of your theme and experimenting and exploring it, you know, so if you're doing, I've blanked, a Scarif theme, don't do every single model on the coastline. because that wouldn't be how an army would look. Do some like that, and maybe the water's at a different angle for some. Maybe some are standing next to a beach. Hell, maybe you found a crab and one of them's standing next to a crab, whatever it is. And just try and add a little bit of variety in a way that's still cohesive. And I know that's a bit of an oxymoron, but I think it makes sense.
No, it does, yeah, it does make sense.
Everybody's 1 foot in the water is somewhat odd. Yeah. So they never advanced. They were held forever.
Yeah. It also makes sense because it gives, I think, a little bit more texture to your army of having... thinking of every base as like a part of a landscape, and that none of it is going to look exactly the same, and so you're not going to have, as you said, like the one tuft or like the 1 foot in water, 1 foot on sand. I know at least like as I've been evolving with my... with my own painting journey, was that like I started with, it's like, okay, everything was painted white because that was just like that's all I had, and then I used like the 3D snow stuff, and then I got better at doing the 3D snow stuff, so I had more like snow mounds that they were kind of walking through, and it got thicker, and then I went back and like I ended up adding some other things, and it's like, okay, well, what would a piece of marble look like if it just started snowing? So like I have the marble bases, but it has like a couple little snowflakes, because then it's still linked into that snow theme, but they're standing elsewhere, and it's kind of like gives it a different texture.
It feels cohesive. The next thing I'm working on is,
like the next thing I'm working on is I'm gonna try to do like water with it. And so I just bought some AK water effects stuff that I'm gonna try to do. So it's like, you know, it's like glacier melting kind of thing, and so there's still ice and snow and things, but there's also active water, and so like their feet will be in water and things, and not just trudging through the snow.
Yeah, that'd be cool. There's a great thing you can do if you're still leaning into the snow things, of getting you can buy rock molds from all over the place. I think I got mine from like a model railroad company, and then I used UV resin and poured them in the rock molds, and then popped that out, and then popped a bit of snow effect on it, and instantly they look like they're standing on some really cool, like icy base. And it's, you know, it is more effort, but it's not loads more effort. It's an hour's extra work. But you know, if you're doing a unit, it's probably still an hour and 10 minutes extra work, because it's more like waiting for things to set and stuff like that. That's a really nice effect.
I love that. That's a good idea.
Yeah, the model train aisle too, like your Hobby Lobbies or like any arts and crafts stores, that have like a surprising amount of stuff that is very useful for this hobby.
I think
not overlap.
I think they're great places to look for different ideas and different products and that sort of thing. I think there's I can't remember who it was that said it. There's some successful painter I was listening to once was saying how every base should tell a story. It was probably Vince Venturella, sounds like the sort of thing he'd say, but your base should tell a story. And you know, I used to really stress about that, going, oh, what's the story? And it, you know, it doesn't have to be War and Peace, it doesn't even have to be Jack Reacher, it can be just, you know, like that crab droid with the pose he's in, he's obviously meant to be walking. Mm-hmm. So as I'm laying out the base, well, let's put a big rock there because he looks like he's clambering over a base. And I'm not saying it's a good story, but it just adds a little. The model's quite dynamic. Let's try and make the base a little bit dynamic as well. And it's seconds to do.
You reminded me that like the first thing that I painted was one of my Tauntauns, and to give a story, to like be more than just white base. I remember before I was finished painting the Tauntaun, I painted the feet of the Tauntaun gray, and then I pressed it onto the base. to give it footprints.
Yeah.
And then I like painted what I actually wanted and then glued it on. And so that way I actually had like footprints that I used from the model so it looked like it was going through the snow.
Footprints
and like
in the
that
snow,
was something
so
that
good.
Like yeah, and like
it's easy.
It's easy, and like it gives it, as you said, like it gives it the story, but like I it wasn't 3D, it wasn't like imprinted in the snow, like it didn't look great. Like it was very kind of like painting your hand and putting it on a piece of paper kind of look, but it worked to tell the story on that base that it was like, no, this is more than just in snow. Like you can see the footprints.
I love that idea, and I am stealing it.
So. Please, by all means, I think that's
like that would work.
Yeah,
like to all the ideas.
You doing that little thing because like you're right, they didn't just spawn on their. Yeah. On their base, you know, they walked there, they marched there, they crawled there, like somehow they got to that point. And it does give it that like motion, I think, a little bit.
And I love that idea. So you could easily do it with just putting some snow texture down and sort of forcing it in, couldn't you? I think that would look really cool. It would have a nice sort of comic effect. I love that.
My last question that I have for you is, so a player has bought their paints, they have their brushes that they've taken very good care of, they've painted their model, they've spent their hours, they did all the Zenithal highlights and all that, and they finally have something that they're very proud of, and they're like, great, this is awesome. What are the steps that they should take to make sure that that stays like that and they don't have to repaint it later?
I'm terrible with my model care. I have I have a shoebox full of award-winning miniatures in the other room that my friends get quite angry at me for, because for me they love painting them. My I don't have a display cabinet. I have a cupboard where I just shove painted models, and that's my love. Every single model I finish, I always matte varnish. I really like the AK Ultra Matte. However, it's not the most protective, so you could use a different product. I'd never use a gloss varnish. The reason I like a matte one, you know, like I say, I use a lot of different brands of paints, and I suppose if you're using a lot of different techniques, you're going to get different finishes on the model. And if that's intentional, then it's great. But actually, if you've just whacked some contrast paint on because you want it to go quickly, or some speed paint or whatever it is, then that will be really shiny next to the other thing that you didn't use that on, and it sort of creates this odd dynamic. And I find when I use the Ultra Matte, it gets rid of that. It also hides brush strokes and watermarks and things like that a little bit, not loads, but it will hide it a little bit. And it also offers a little bit of protection. So I think, you know, you absolutely should be varnishing your models, especially if they're gaming pieces. And then if you want to go back and do a water feature, obviously you wouldn't want that matte. So you just have to factor in as part of your process. I won't finish the basing until I've done the thing. I tried a thing, oddly, just before I got on this call. I was painting the new rebel officer. You know, he's got a sort of bandaged leg, and I decided, oh yeah, after I've finished painting him and I've matte varnished him, I'm going to put on some like really glossy red blood effect to make it look like his wound's weeping. It looked terrible in the end, and I spent 10 minutes scraping it off with the toothbrush. But I had to factor that in as part of the process. And it does, like, when you've suddenly got that gloss next to that matte, it looks great as well. But yeah, in terms of protecting your models, I always varnish them. You know, mine are all painted for gaming. If they're not painted for gaming, they're just sitting in the cupboard next door, really. But yeah, I'm quite bad at that. I've got a lot of broken lightsabers and one-armed rebel troopers and things like that.
No, the varnish thing, though. I'm just now using varnishes, and it really does help so much. Because you're touching these things, like, all the time. Like, the oils from your fingers will peel the paint off, and so it helps a lot.
And I didn't realize how much varnishes actually help until I started using them, and then I was like, oh, this is how you make sure that they don't end up just, like, gray nubs on their elbows and things. And I was like, all right, yeah.
I think army painter do what, like, I like that Ultra Matte, although I keep looking behind me because I've got a load of stuff on the desk. I think army painter do a rattle can matte varnish that's really good. I can't remember it's the army painter matte varnish, whatever it's called. I think that's really good, and it's much more protective than that other one I buy. But I think there's also a thing with, and I don't fully understand this, but the paint's dried but it's not fully cured. So I often find if I've sat up late the night before going, oh, I'm going to a tournament tomorrow, I really want to take this new unit, I want to make sure it's really nicely painted, I'll sit up late the night before and finish it off. By the time I get home from the tournament, little bits of it will have rubbed off, whereas the stuff that's been painted for ages is like bulletproof, and you couldn't get that paint off if you want it. And I'm not sure what the science is or what the difference is behind that, but I do know when it's dry is not the same as when it's fully cured. So pass as to how that happens, but if you can, leave time before you start shoving it in a box to take it to a tournament, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. Rob, for the people that are watching, how can they find you? How can they find your videos and what you've got coming out next?
So you can get me in the Discord. I'm Rob Hobbies on there. I'm not particularly active on Discord. You're better trying to find me on Instagram. Same thing, Rob Hobbies. All our videos are part of the 5th Trooper Network under Hobby Phase. So we've got the crab droids out at the moment. We've got a customizable Imperial officer coming out in the next few days, next week, I guess. I've also finished painting up a rebel officer, but I'm not super happy with him, so I don't know if we'll be doing a video on that, guys. So I think he looks nice, but he doesn't look Star Wars. And I don't know if that's my fault with the painting or the sculpt. I couldn't, you know, the armor they're wearing, I couldn't find sort of canon examples of that armor.
Yeah. It is different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to send all the models that you don't like, you can just mail them to me.
The thing is, I will just shove them in any old envelope, and they'll come in pieces.
If they make it there, they make it there.
There'll be a sub-assembly by the time they arrive.
Some parts unassembled.
Rob, once again, welcome to the team. We're so glad to have you, and thank you so much for spending your evening with us and talking. We appreciate it, and hopefully this will make us better painters. This will make you at home better painters, so hopefully you've learned something here talking to Rob, and, you know, we do all of this for the love of the game.